This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success. Welcome to Office Hours. I'm David Meltzer. This is the Dream Team Edition, and the players keep on getting better and better. And I'm blessed to be the sixth man on this team with some incredible teammates up here as co-hosts, Madeline, Joseph, and Chad. Thank you all for joining the team on Office Hours today.
Thanks for having us.
All right, our last guest today is a special friend of mine. I've known him since he was in college, and actually was blessed. One of my best friends blocked for him his center at San Diego State University. And God bless him for knowing where his own talents lied, because they wanted him to be a defensive back, not at San Diego State, but most colleges wouldn't even consider him being a running back. But yet when people saw him in college, I've been told, Chad, they said, holy moly, this guy is the combination of every great running back. And his career proved that, because he ended up to be one of the greatest Hall of Fame running backs of all time. Besides being a Super Bowl champion in a season that he didn't even believe was going to be his Super Bowl championship year, 7 Pro Bowls back when the Pro Bowl meant something, because people could actually play in the Pro Bowl. First team All-Pro, second team All-Pro, many years. The NFL Most Valuable Player Award, the Burt Bell Award as well, 3-time NFL Offensive Player of the Year, and the NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year. That doesn't come easy. That is not an accident. You cannot be born into that. A lot of people think you can be born into that much talent, but as someone who ran the most notable sports agency and had been around Hall of Famers my entire career, you got to have some born talent, but you're not born in. Serena Williams was not born a great tennis player. He was born in, with extraordinary skills and knowledge, but it takes a delta of desire, a desire that you must be what you can be to have that kind of outcome in your life. And that's why I've always tried to surround myself in the business world with Hall of Famers. I've partnered with Hall of Famers, and my mom even asked me, well, why, Dave, you're around, you know, John Hennessy and Phil Knight and these incredible business minds. Why do you pick to partner with Hall of Fame athletes to do business with? And I said, because although some of those gentlemen have great successes in business, they don't have a desire that they must be what they can be, and I can trust in that. And this partner of mine, Marshall Faulk, is someone I trust in. Every aspect that happens, every challenge in business that occurs, he takes the higher road, and he proves to me every time that he is a man that has a desire that he must be what he can be. But the nice thing is, instead of doing it for himself and for his teammates on the field, he's now doing it for the world. And so I want to welcome a close friend and someone who I look up to, an icon for all of us to look up to in the Delta and the desire. Marshall Faulk, welcome to Office Hours.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave. Thank you.
To that end, it's a long road, and you've told so many stories. I love when you give your championship speech. I learn every time that he illuminates in a vulnerable way. Can you share with everyone a story that is un-Marshall Faulk-like? That may be a moment where, you know, whether it was on or off the field, that you weren't the Hall of Fame quarterback and you learned a lesson about your own ego or about your own human capability that has taught you to be where you want to be, and you had to utilize that delta, that desire to become who you are today.
Yeah. Untold story. Right after my sophomore season, probably one of the best seasons ever in college football. I'm up for the Heisman, and I go to New York like I'm winning this damn trophy. There's no way I'm not winning this trophy. First time my mom had ever been to New York, and we're riding around New York checking
from
out
Louisiana.
The Big Apple, from Louisiana, checking out the Big Apple, and it's an incredible time for my family. And the day of the show, you know, they're taping, it's live, and may you rest in peace. As they called us out, and we're standing up there, O.J. Simpson walks up to me and he says, hey man, you had one of the best seasons I've ever seen in college football. He said, it was awesome.
You didn't play for Alabama. I mean, you played for a team that never really won.
Right. And he said, you know, just keep playing. He said, keep playing and keep your chin up. And I'm like, all right.
Oh, no.
Cool. I'm like, all right, cool. And we go through the whole thing, and literally they announced the winner, and it's Gino Toretta. You know, I'm not crazy about awards, and I'm not like I need to win an award. But when you think you're going to win an award,
and you deserve it,
right. You know, and you don't.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I think I was 18 at the time. You know, I hadn't even turned 19 yet. It was a gut punch, and I had never had that happen to me before. And I remember I left out of the room. I emotionally wasn't prepared for to not win. I left out of the room and I went upstairs to my room and I was just like, I wasn't coming down. I didn't want to talk to the press or anything. And I remember my mom came up and she was like, my mom threatened. She was like, I don't know who you are or who you think you are. If you don't put your suit back on and get your butt downstairs. I'm in college now. I will whip you. Like, imagine my mom whipping her, you know. At this time, I'm 5'11", 212 pounds. I'm like, you know, like, getting a whipping from my mom. I'm just thinking about. But in that time, you know, I wasn't the savvy media. Understanding how in order to win you must be able to accept losing. I didn't understand any of that, and that moment, me going downstairs facing the media, doing all the interviews, signing the autographs, taking the pictures with the guys, it was the beginning of my career and learning how. One of the most important things in professional sports is you got to be a gracious loser in order to know how to win. In order for winning to find you, you got to understand what the other person is going to feel like. And every time we won, I always found the other running back or the other star player, and I went up to him and I always had some words of encouragement. I like your game. I really think you're working hard. Keep going. I always found the guy. And I only learned that because I remember how it felt. I remember that gut punch. I remember what it was like to lose, and it created the character in me that I am. I hate awards because I hate losing and I hate winning them because I'm always thinking about the person who doesn't get the win. Like, their family is there too. They're there to be supported. And it's just, it's a bad feeling on both sides. I'll be honest, it's a bad feeling on both sides.
Well, if you think you were surprised and all your fans were surprised, which they were, trust me, I was one of them. You should have seen Gino's face.
Yeah, right.
When he won it.
And yeah,
that's when you know,
yeah, that's exactly
you
right.
Should have won the award when you see Gino's
every
face.
Every time going, I see him, I always say, how's my trophy?
Exactly. good enough, though, that our friend Reggie Bush got his
back. That was awesome.
That's justified.
That was awesome.
That's beautiful. Awesome. And Pete Rose gets into the Hall of Fame. This world may actually be right away from the hypocrisy of sports.
That's
so,
right.
Madeline, welcome to one of my greatest hey,
Marshall,
heroes.
How are you?
Pleasure. I'm doing very well.
That's
very well.
Good.
I'm having an awesome day.
Oh, that's awesome. So looking back at your success and achievements that you've had, what would you consider would be the legacy, the greatest legacy on and off the field?
Off the field is easy. One of the most challenging things in the world that I'm proud of is being a father. Mm. You know, raising kids. And they have my kids, you know, being in their 20s and having a teenage daughter that's 16. And that, you know, at this point in time in life, they still want to hang out with me. I'm like,
yes.
Winning, for sure. You go through those hateful times and you've got a parent heart because you want them to learn a lesson. And you just don't know if they're ever going to get over it, if they're ever going to forgive you for it. But you know, we teach them how to forgive as well by forgiving them for the things that they do just in growing up. That's easy. On the field, I mean, I did so much in football. I would probably say the thing that I was most proud of is that I had the ability to be unselfish. The guys that played with me, they would tell you, I was never in the huddle saying, give me the ball. It didn't matter how bad. If I felt I could win the game, I didn't have to ask for the ball. There was a reason why I wasn't getting it. I played with amazing teammates, and when they scored, it was like I scored. I celebrated with them. We scored. And I really believe in the mantra of team. Like together we rise. If we can do it together, we're going to be better. And that was one thing that was always, it was always something that I always wanted to do. I wanted to be a part of not just a winning team, but a winning organization that people looked at and said, I want to be like them. If you watched us play, when I got to St. Louis and I was able to be the leader of a team and lead some men, when you watched us play, you were like, these guys are having fun.
Yeah.
When we kicked people's butt, it wasn't that we kicked their butt. It was, they saw how much fun we had. I used to always tell them, I was like, listen, here's the reality. We're in a huddle before we got to play. I said, I don't care who that is over there. They came to see us. Right. We are the show. So let's go out here and have fun. And that's what we tried to do each and every time.
Amazing.
Joseph, I remember Jim Kelly telling me about Andre Reed. He goes, dude, he drives me crazy. He was always asking for the ball. And I'm like, well, I get it. I know Andre. I can see why, you know, he wanted to win. He said, no, I'm talking about a co-ed flag football game when we retired.
Those wide receivers are different, man. They're different guys.
Yeah. Joseph.
Marshall, I just can't stress how blessed I am just to be in your presence. Like, growing up as a fan, like, I really can't believe I'm sitting here with you. Like, and I'm so stoked that we have the same watch. Like, I'm like, I got something in common with you.
There
this
you
is
go.
even better. Yeah. One thing that I talked to other folks about who are professional athletes who made this transition from crazy fame. Now, no one I've ever talked to, and I've never had the blessing of being to work with Hall of Famers like yourself ever. You're the first Hall of Famer I even get to, you know, other than being on the screen and just like, that guy's amazing. But, you know, so I'm blessed just to even meet you. I don't get to hang out with you and do business with the Hall of Famers. But what is the transition?
Wait, hold on. We're going to do business. He has a huge e-mortgage business. So, Marshall, tonight at the dinner, we need to sit down with Joseph and say, how many people do you have in your system?
We have a couple thousand people. We have about 900 independent loan officers branches of the mortgage company. So, man, if I can
see where I'm feeling.
Yep.
You know, I'd love to do business with you, Marshall. So anything I could do to collaborate with you. And I heard you're in California, too. So, we're going to have you on the show,
too. He lives in
Newport
Beach bubble.
Yeah. And what city are you in?
La Jolla.
Oh, yeah. So sweet. We're neighbors.
Somewhat.
I got a place in Carlsbad. I'll meet you. I'll meet you halfway there. But what was the transition like from being a Hall of Fame superstar to just going into the entrepreneurial world? How did you transition into that?
Humbly. Yeah. I didn't come in. I didn't allow those credentials to get in the way of what I wanted to learn, what I wanted to be, and where I wanted to go. I was okay with starting at the bottom. Like, I was okay with, because...
Hall of Famer starting at the bottom?
Here's the reality. If you start at the bottom, then you can relate to the people who come in at the entry level.
Mm.
If I have you start me midway, they gonna have issues. Yeah, they gonna come to me for leadership. I can't help them if I've never been there. Mm-hmm. So there's if you watch the franchises that do well, their managers and stuff, their managers started mopping floors, dropping fries in the grease at McDonald's, flipping burgers. You cannot lead people at something you've never done if you've never done it. It just doesn't work. So for me, you know, being humble and literally looking people in the eyes and being authentic and saying, hey, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Teach me. Like, I want to learn. I don't want to be the smartest person in the room. That is not the room I want to be in. Like, you know, I have a lid on me if that's the case. I always want to learn. I always want to grow. And one of the things for me was understanding that sometimes, and this is the challenge, sometimes the person that's going to teach you and give you that information, they might be younger than you. they might know a little more than you. And you know, growing up, we always looked at our elders as the know-it-all. They had all the answers. And in today's world, that's changed. Yeah. It's changed. You have to have the ability to be led by people that eventually you may lead them, but you have to allow them to teach you.
It's funny you say that. All my consultants now that are like for social media are half my age.
They're 12.
And they're brilliant. Yeah.
They are.
Yeah, they're brilliant. Me. And you can't even compare. Do you think when you, because I never heard the story of O.J. Simpson telling you to keep playing. Do you think that was like a defining, because you mentioned it. Was that a defining moment? And is that what like inspired you to keep telling your other teammates or your other competitors?
So story has it that the year before O.J. won the Heisman, he was a freshman and you couldn't win it as a freshman. So he should have won it as a freshman, but you couldn't win the Heisman as a freshman. He won it as a sophomore. Mm. Mm. So he had the same feeling. He's just keep playing.
Unbelievable. I know the general manager of the Montage, one of my favorite things. He takes all these Cornell graduates and they get hired into to work at the Montage. And their first day, he's like, yeah, well, you're going to be with Susie cleaning the rooms. And they look at him like, dude, I graduated Cornell top of my class. And he explains exactly what Marshall does. So everyone, why that service is so good is everyone learns every single and has to experience what it's like so that they know how to manage the people to make it better.
Yeah.
But also to identify saying, I know what it's like to clean a room. I know how long it takes to clean a room, how hard it is. And I'm empathizing with you with the effort that you're giving for the common good and the common cause here. I think it's brilliant. And I always tell them, I love seeing the faces of like, yeah, here you go, here's a mop. Get going. Cornell's great, but this is the real world. Chad, you're one who, when we share stages, I love the story about you were the guy in back of the stage.
Yeah, on the other side of the wall.
On the other side of the wall. Dishwasher. Saying someday, you know, I want to be on this side of the wall.
Didn't think it was possible. I was the guy washing the dishes and setting the tables up for the people that were giving the talks. And I always wondered what it would be like not to be on the stage, just to be important enough to be at a meeting on the other side of the wall, right? Because we'd be on this other side of this partition going, my gosh, those people must be smart. They must be successful. They have no problems. They're like, and just thinking, imagine, like, my God, this is so important. They get to be there, but I'm just a dishwasher. And people had said, you're just a dishwasher. You're just, you know, that's not for you. And now to be on the other side of the stage, never forgetting that it was because I was on that side of the wall that this side of the wall is even possible.
And when we speak, he brings everyone out that's working from both sides of the wall, yeah. And he thanks them.
I stop every talk, and I make sure the people that are standing on the other side of the wall come out on this side of the wall and feel what it's like to be appreciated on this side of the wall. So, I have a question here, and it's something when we were together last week, I wanted to ask you, and I thought about it after we left, and that is, I'm going to make an assumption that financially, a Hall of Fame running back, one of the best running backs of all time, could just live probably just off the earnings you made as an NFL superstar. If not that, you could charge exorbitant amount of fees just for keynotes and live a pretty comfortable life just living on the keynotes that you could do off promotional deals. Why being an entrepreneur? Why, like, it can't be money driven. I'm sure there's money aspects or financial aspects, but why not just ride off into the sunset and live comfortably the next 30 years? Why deal with the stress and the aggravation and the headaches and the moments of being an entrepreneur?
You explained being an entrepreneur well.
Most people, they win the championship and then they stop and they bask in the glory of what it was. But you, it was a false summit to you. You got to the summit and it's like, oh shit, there's another mountain right there.
Yeah.
And you chose to track this other mountain.
I'm addicted to the juice, man. Like, I'm addicted to the juice.
Like, not OJ.
I wanna the feeling of taking on the challenge, this might fail. Dealing with the problems, the ups and downs, some of these things that we do, it don't come with a manual. We are building the manual for people to follow. It's just different. It's different. It's different than buying a franchise. It's different than doing something that people have done before. Most of the things as an entrepreneur that you're doing, it hasn't been done before. You're scratching the surface in an arena. Most of the time that people, everybody's saying, oh, don't do that. Why? Just like you said, people ask me, why are you wasting your time doing that? Because because I like wasting my time doing this. This is what I want to do.
Yeah, this is. I said this about you in a conversation I was having a couple weeks ago. And football is a finite game, has a beginning and an end. Right? It has a winner and a loser. But you're playing an infinite game.
Yeah,
I'm playing. There is no end. This is just like the sport. The sport may have changed, but the mindset is the same, and that is I'm playing an infinite game.
Yeah, and you know I guess I say this because it's different for me in a sense. Most people when they're an entrepreneur, they're doing it, and there's real entrepreneurs out there that they're sacrificing everything. Yeah. They're sleeping in their car. They're really doing it.
Yeah.
I'm not that hardcore. I live a good life.
Yeah.
But I love the feeling of when everything's on the line. I love that feeling when hold on, wait, who's going to do it? I got to do it. I love that feeling. It's just there's nothing like it. There's nothing that replaces it.
When we partner together and, you know, kind of testing out to see, hey, does you have that delta, that desire in business? And first meeting that we said, and I'm like, is this guy gonna drive all the way up here, you know, for this meeting? Because it wasn't that big of a meeting. And right on time, 5 minutes before practice, there he was. I said, okay, he's the real deal. It's the game he's playing. He needs to be the best that he can be at the game he's playing. It is a lot easier to play the game when you have a little bit of money in the bank and some security. Taking it from someone that risked it all and lost that, I said to myself, I don't want to play this game again if it's going to go to zero. So I'm going to get to a point where my zero is much higher.
It's a different game. That's why I had to pay respect to the real entrepreneurs, the people who are sacrificing their last for like really, they are real entrepreneurs. Like I'm a propped up entrepreneur. I got backing.
I can appreciate that. But if you go out here, if you go out to one of these casino tables, right, the chip colors may change, but the game is the same. Yeah. Right, you're just playing with different chips. You're just playing with different chips than somebody else, but you're still playing the game, which I find unbelievably.
Well, there's no better teammate to have playing the game of life than a guy who understands the importance of family first and health, and also pouring into his community. I know his effort is to provide financial literacy and empowerment to millions of people around the world, and he's doing a great job. Which is why it's an honor to have you as a partner and a friend, and always showing up, especially to enlighten us. No better team, no better place. It's an honor to have the Hall of Fame running back and one of my extraordinary friends and partners, Marshall Faulk, here on Office Hours.